This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will talk with the well-known political consultant, Roy Fletcher. Much to discuss with him regarding events of recent vintage. Governor Jindal and Superintendent of Education John White at odds over Common Core. And the question now is whether Superintendent White can keep his job. Also, Steve Scalise, now the number three man in the Republican majority in the U.S. House of Representatives, just 6 years after he arrived in Washington as the successor to Bobby Jindal. We'll talk about that, the Senate race, the governor's race next year, and much more with Roy Fletcher. And Chris Collin, his book is What to Talk About on a Plane, at a Cocktail Party, in a Tiny Elevator, with Your Boss's Boss. Now the news on WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your local dial. Outside the area, please call 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Frank Barnett is producing, and we're joined to start the week with the always lively and provocative political consultant, Roy Fletcher. Good morning to you, Roy.
Good morning, Jim.
We had your mentor, Gus Weil, on Friday.
I did not hear him.
Well.
How's he doing?
He's doing well. He's doing very well.
Yeah, good, good.
And you and he spent a few years together.
Spent a few years together. Yes, we did. Happy years.
Yeah, and got a lot of people elected. Lost some, too.
Yeah, we lost some. I've lost my share, maybe more than my share.
Yeah, I remember 1983. You were with David Connor Treen.
David C. Treen, yes, I was.
Who was a very dedicated public servant, an honest man, and the thanks he got after one term as governor, what, was 37% or thereabouts?
He said about 38.
Yeah.
Yeah, against the
Cajun Prince.
Yes, and who probably never left the, may have left the governor's office, but never left running the government. I'm talking about Edmund.
Even when he was in federal prison, I'm sure his tentacles were far and wide. But certainly when he left in 1980.
Well, he didn't lose. Lewis lost. Lewis Lambert.
Lewis, yeah. He couldn't run.
That's right.
For a
That's
third
right.
term. Yep. And he actually said that he, as he endorsed Lambert, he said, "I'm endorsing Lewis Lambert, but I must say, I hope Dave Treen wins so I can run against him in 4 years.
Yes, it was one of the more backhanded endorsements I've ever seen in my life, and it did leave the Lambert people very upset. And to this day, some of them that I speak to still are mad about that.
Well, and Lewis Lambert, the much-forgotten
Lambert. He only lost that race.
8,900 votes.
Yeah, that's right.
If Edwin had given him a real endorsement, he probably would have been the guy.
They always point to Acadia Parish. That shows that Edwin really didn't do anything. I've heard that many, many times, but funny.
Well, speaking of Edwin, and we're going to cover some ground, but is this one last roll of the dice for the Cajun Prince?
Yeah, you know, I don't know exactly. Yeah, I guess it is, but I think he's going to be formidable, and I don't think he can win, but somebody that's won as many times as Edwin Edwards, I don't ever count out about anything. Mm-hmm. And if he gets into a runoff, which he probably will, it will not be pretty, or it may not be anything at all. I don't know.
And you have a candidate in that race, don't
you? That's correct, yeah. It's State Senator Dan Clayton.
Who could very well be
the
guy in the runoff.
He could be, and could not be. I mean, that's to be determined. Right now, Dan is running second. And it would be an interesting runoff.
No doubt.
But, I don't disrespect anybody in this business.
Congressman Steve Scalise, 6 years after going to Washington, May 3rd, 2008.
An extraordinary rise.
Extraordinary.
Yes, extraordinary.
Really, and in 6 years, he's a number three guy in the majority of the House of Representatives. And he's done this without shooting for that, at least overtly. And yet you have Governor Jindal, who's been running for president from the day he was inaugurated, January 14th, 2008.
Or born.
Maybe so.
And he, yet, much like Rome.
Yet Scalise has, to this point, as I talked with Gus Friday, I think you could make a case that he has risen higher than Governor Jindal has on the national stage.
I think so. The truth is that Steve Scalise did not do this by simply by hanging around and letting his heart beat. And he didn't do it by simply going out and making a lot of statements. What Steve Scalise did was to spend his time in the LBJ fashion. There's a fabulous article in Politico about it today, how he went about doing the little things. Making sure that if somebody spoke up for him, they got a little lanyard. Making sure that whoever said anything, they got a little note. He went about the small things, and he was intense about it. He was methodical about it, and he never quit doing it. Much like Lyndon Johnson operated as majority leader of the United States Senate, if you read Robert Caro's mm-hmm. book. And Scalise really impressed me. When I read this, because he was an institutional operator, but he could talk to everybody because of his of his sort of winning ways in terms of his personality. Very, very, very interesting guy. And I've been asked what that means for Louisiana. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know what it means for Louisiana, but it does mean one thing. There will be a Louisianian at the table. And that's a big deal. I think that's a big deal.
Yeah, he's now in the same league with Hale Boggs.
Yes, 42 years ago, I believe.
That's right, when Steve Scalise was all of six. He's 48 now, and Steve Scalise quite possibly will rise to higher ranks in the Republican Party.
If he keeps himself straight and he doesn't mess up, a la, you know, Bob Livingston mess ups, This man has the opportunity, given his youth, I mean, at 48, young, in 15 years or even sooner, he could be Speaker of the United States House of Representatives, the third ranking position in American government. That's extraordinary.
And get the honor that was about to go to Bob Livingston 15 years ago.
Yes, that apparently a little – there's a lot of them boys down in Jefferson got them problems, don't they?
Well, and like Senator Vitter, Bob Livingston never acknowledged what the problem was. Unlike Senator Vitter, though, he immediately resigned.
Yes, he knew when to fold him.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, Senator Vitter last week was at the press club of Baton Rouge, and he accepted an invitation. And by the way, today's guest will be Woody Jenkins, who, to my knowledge, it was not even listed in The Advocate. Kind of curious, but
that is curious.
Jenkins will be there, and he'll talk, I'm sure, about St. George and other matters. But David Vitter and Bill Cassidy, by the way, has been invited several times to appear at the press club this year and has declined. So I don't know what's going on with him. Apparently, he feels like he's sitting on a lead and doesn't have to work that hard to be a U.S. senator. But David Vitter knows that it's rough and tumble to become governor, but he comes before the press club, and he's noncommittal on almost everything. Was that a surprise to you?
Yes, it was. He was noncommittal on things that that he had defined himself on. And that that really surprised me, and it shows some years ago, Jim. I actually wrote a few columns or article, something, whatever you call them, opinion pieces for the Advocate. That was the Baton Rouge Advocate, the Morning Advocate at the time. And this is like 30 years ago. And I wrote an article. It said, "Look, in Louisiana, when you come from Washington to run for governor, you may run." You may be a conservative in Washington, but when you come to run for governor, you're going to try to run to the middle. And precisely what David Vitter is stumbling around trying to do. And the problem with it is now is that you have social media, and it gets broadcast immediately, and there have been conservative blogs and magazines and newspapers that have just wailed on him about his position on Medicare. Expansion, that he's been against it. Suddenly now he's And they took it as him being for it, that he was for Medicaid expansion, which I don't think he said, but he didn't say he was against it either.
He said everything's on the table.
Everything is on the table, which for a conservative means everything's on the table, which means that it's not off the table, which they took as that's wrong. And he's gotten whipped up pretty good nationally over that. And one of them even called him a rhino. I mean, can you imagine? That's a guy calling Thad Cochran a liberal. But the point of it is that he sort of set that situation up. I forget there was some other thing. There's something on Common Core. Well, he hadn't
read it.
He hadn't looked at it. The suit
against the law. The oil and gas industry.
How about that? Wasn't that interesting?
He wouldn't even take a stand on that.
Would not take a stand. So what does that tell us about it? He assumes that his right flank is completely covered and nobody can take that away from him, so he can move to the middle and try to play games. And he's very good. He's always been good. And I've chased that fella for 18 years now, I think. Well, no, since 99. He's very good at obfuscating things that he does not want to take positions on. And he did that precisely at the press club. I think it was probably a little bit too early, because it gave people an idea of what his strategy is clearly going to be.
Well, he has one announced Republican opponent in the Lieutenant Governor, Jay Darden.
Yes.
Who
did not say a word about
this. No, that was surprising too. But in my view, and I'm certainly not a supporter of any candidate in this race, but I think Darden would be the worst nightmare for any candidate in a runoff.
In a runoff. Yes, that's right.
But the problem for him is that the odds seem strong against him making a runoff. Why are the odds against him making a runoff?
I don't know that they're strongly against him because no, I don't want to say that. I don't think that they're necessarily strongly against Jay or any other candidate like Jay. I think, though, that because the Democrats will have a candidate, it makes it difficult for there to be any middle ground in terms of white voters. That's what the argument is. And that's what Vitter's argument, which is basically his campaign message, is I'm inevitable. That is what the Vitter argument is all about and what it's people are supposed to believe. I don't necessarily believe that. I don't think you have to be I think there is some, I don't want to call it middle ground, but I think there's some less conservative ground there. Well, it's still conservative, but it's just less conservative.
Yesterday in the Baton Rouge and New Orleans Advocate, James Gill, one of your favorite columnists and mine, he writes, getting elected governor is much easier if you have a winning personality, a sterling record in another public office, and no known vices. Two out of three will take a candidate a long way most of the time. One might do in a weak field, but a zero should be the kiss of death. If you're rated least effective in your current job, have never been accused of charm or wit, played a central role in a prostitution scandal, and concede you need to do more homework on crucial issues, the smart money says stay home, unless you are David Vitter. Not only is he running, but polls make him a favorite in next year's election. He must be some kind of a political genius, writes James Gill.
He just might be.
He's never lost a race.
He's never lost a race, and James Gill may be just exactly right. He might be a political genius. Then again, he might be lucky. I don't know. And I think luck enters into a lot of things.
Sure, it enters into a lot of things.
But he has never lost a race. He has weathered a very, very difficult scandal. And I'm not sure how he did it, but he did it well. And he has established a persona. You see, that's the problem with what he did at the press club. He's established a persona as being anti-Obama, just like he was anti-Edwards, anti-Obama and anti-liberal. And suddenly he comes down here and he's a moderate, and it's very confusing to people.
When he was first elected sent to the Senate, I went by his office one day. He wasn't in, but I noticed that his next-door neighbor was a guy named Barack Obama. Back with Roy Fletcher in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, 877-217-5757 and Inkster Show at WRKF.org. The Jefferson Parish Corridor, which Roy Fletcher noted, has now produced some of the best-known and most elected Louisiana politicos of the last few decades, when you consider Bob Livingston and Steve Scalise now, David Vitter, Bobby Jindal. He got elected from that area.
Yep.
Republican from Kenner, Bobby Jindal. And there was, of course, David Ernest Duke, who
there was
made a
also
splash.
Harry Lee.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. You're exactly right.
You know, I mean,
he was a player.
He was a real player. A real player.
And Senator.
Before then, I mean, Hale was Hale Boggs.
Well,
was
when you're talking about New Orleans.
Yeah.
But when we were kids, New Orleans people didn't get elected statewide. Chet Morrison proved that. He was a very popular mayor of New Orleans. Couldn't beat an unknown guy from Columbia at the time, and John Julian McKithen.
That's right.
But the things have changed, and the New Orleans corridor is now, and we're talking Jefferson Parish, St. Tammany Parish, it's producing the leaders of our state. Mary Landrieu is U.S. Senator, David Vitter's U.S. Senator, Bobby Jindal's governor, and then you go down the list. John Kennedy lives in Madisonville.
Yeah.
Most of the statewide elected officials from the greater New Orleans area.
Yes.
So when we look at the governor's race next year,
you got to look that, don't you?
Well, you got David Vitter, who's from that area. You got Jay Darden, who's from Baton Rouge.
Yes.
And John Bell Edwards, who's from Amite.
Yes. And then we got some people that may or may not get in the race.
Jim Bernhardt.
Well, that's a possibility.
Would he be a factor?
His money's a factor. He would be a factor, yes. I mean, I think it would make it difficult for John Bell Edwards in the, you know, sort of to become the, and it may split the Democratic vote enough to where you get two Republicans in the runoff. That could happen.
What about the Landrieus? One of them,
Mitch
or Mary.
I mean, I got to assume that we're talking about Mitch because, I mean, when Mary gets beat, or if she gets beat, or she'll probably get whatever it is. I mean, my guess is she'll go on her way, but. I mean, I think Mitch is, I think he's a real serious candidate. I think he would run a great primary race, and then it would be close. I think he's a real serious candidate. And I'll tell you why. He's a Democrat, and that's sort of a not good, but he's an executive. He's run something, and he's run the city. And he's actually doing a from everything I can discern down there, he's doing a pretty good job. And he's taking on some sacred cows. And he might very well be, he can make the case that I've run a city and I can run the state. And you know, competency, I think, is going to be an issue in a lot of races.
I think his he's the best public speaker in Louisiana politics today, too.
I would say he and Scott Ungell.
Well, Scott's, you're kind of partial to Scott.
No, but I am partial to Scott. But on the other hand, I mean, I just know what I've seen. And I mean, the man's an extraordinary speaker.
Well, and he may end up running for governor.
He may, yeah. And that's a possibility. Then that gets us back to the whole Acadiana thing. And would be interesting.
Rita notes, and I think she's right, and maybe you know more, Newell Norman, the sheriff down there in Jefferson Parish, he's backing Darden, I think.
Yes, that is correct.
And why wouldn't he back his hometown guy?
I don't think they get along. I do think that let me say this about the sheriff. I've seen the sheriff's numbers in Jefferson Parish, and I don't think I would want the sheriff of Jefferson Parish opposing me in an election. I'll just tell you that right now. He's tough. He's smart. That guy's an articulate guy. He could have been a real candidate himself. Mm-hmm. He thought about it. Yes, he's back in Darden, and I think that's one of the biggest things that's happened for Darden in this race so far.
That's a big one.
That's a huge one.
That's a huge one.
And Jay will
do well in Baton Rouge.
Yes. I think he's going to do very well in Baton Rouge. Baton Rouge is kind of an odd thing. It's cut up in two or three different slices out there. But, you know, yeah, he's going to do very well here. And Vitter's going to do okay. But the thing in Jefferson Parish is real interesting. That's local politics. Real local politics.
But you're saying the sheriff and Senator Vitter are not on the same page?
Not even close.
What caused that?
I don't know. I don't quite. It just may very well be a personality thing, too. I don't know. But Newell Norman's he's a very, very strong, tough, articulate, and well-educated. He's a lawyer, sheriff. I mean, he's, right. You know.
297-5633, your number. InksterShow@WRKF.org for Roy Fletcher. Laura wants to know if your former client, she says she'd like to see John Kennedy get in the race for governor.
I think John is looking at this race, and I don't blame him. I would look at it. He's had a good legislative session. He finally passed that bill about the consultant thing and all. He's had a pretty good run here. And I think he's given it a real look-see. And some of the polls that I've seen have John beating Jay and being the second Republican, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And, he's got to sort of turn on one of his sponsors, and that's David Vitter. I mean, Vitter's been a big sponsor, John.
Well, I think David Vitter is probably in the story behind the story. You may agree or not, but David Vitter is probably the guy who coaxed John Kennedy into switching parties.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
and if John Kennedy had not switched parties, he quite likely would be the ordained Democrat running in this race and would have a better shot of winning than being one of three Republicans.
Probably. Well, you can't argue with that. I mean, that's absolutely
so switching
true.
Parties, and we've seen it happen with Buddy Romer and others, it rarely works as far as political objectives.
It works sometimes.
Worked
other
for
times.
Mike Foster.
Yeah, it worked for.
But Mike Foster was not a well-known commodity before he switched parties.
Well, and what he was known as was, as people often told him, I can't believe you're a Democrat because you're more conservative than a Republican. That's what they would tell him. And that was early on. And that was from his little newspaper ads and so on. And so. They got the sense that. And so it was just sort of natural for him to be a Republican. And we used it to our advantage.
And earlier you talked about luck, Roy, and he drew Cleo Fields, who was not a candidate who was going to win that election. Unfortunately, because of his race, that's what it comes down to. You or I could have defeated Cleo Fields in a head-up race. But would Mike Foster have defeated Mary Landrieu, who almost made that runoff? Would he have won?
Yes.
You were the political consultant.
I think he would have won, but it had been close. But it was a different time and a different place. It was 20 years ago, being a Democrat wasn't quite so bad as it is today. And that would have been a tough one.
All right. Before we get to Common Core, what about Senator Landrieu? As I stated, Bill Cassidy, he has shied away from being on this program. He used to come on here a lot. He's now not coming to the press club. He's playing it safe, if that's what playing it safe is what it is
this
all
is
about.
This is a close game, and going in the stall is not real smart. But I noticed that he had to go on. He finally went on TV, et cetera. And it was time, and I think it probably helped him some. But going into a stall is not going to help you.
Henry Johnson at the Country Club of Louisiana says, how far will Mitch Landrieu singing the Ave Maria at funerals take him? There wasn't a dry eye in New Orleans after he sang for Lindy Boggs.
Pretty obvious he's a good Catholic.
He's Mitch, an untold story about him, unlike his sister. Mitch, his entire educational background is at Catholic schools, graduate of Jesuit High School, graduate of Catholic University of America, graduate of Loyola Law School. So he is the Catholic's Catholic.
He's Jesuit trained.
And he, in his, to his credit, and I don't mean this as a knock on him, his degree at Catholic University was in theater. And he knows how to
hold
a crowd. He's very good.
No question about that. I didn't know he could sing. That really got me when he, and that's not an easy song to sing either, by the way. It's a tough song. I can't sing it. I mumble through it, but
But Mitch pulled it off.
He pulled it off. It kind of reminds me of in Hangover 3, You remember when the daddy died and the guy sang Ave Maria?
Yeah, well, another listener, Ariane, I think it's Ariane.
Ariana Huffington?
No, this is an E, not an A.
Okay.
But she wants to know about Mary Landrieu and her father, Moon, the spots. What do you think of those?
I didn't like them.
Why not?
I just didn't like them. I just didn't. They didn't do anything for me. And I'm not, I'm just not too sure how many people knew who the man was on the screen. It's been a long time.
It has. He was last mayor in 1978.
So. Yeah, and he was at HUD. But that's 30-something years
that's
ago.
Almost 40 years
ago. Yeah, almost 40 years ago.
So, and being in the Carter administration may not be such a great thing in Louisiana.
Well, no. Or anywhere in America. but be that as I didn't like him.
You would have done.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, if you were running Landrieu and Cassidy's campaigns respectively, what would be the first thing out of the chute for Landrieu and the first thing out of the chute for Cassidy?
Well, I think that Mary's trying to do what Mary has to do, which is to separate herself to some extent from Obama, and she's using the energy issue as a way to do it, and that's probably her best. That's probably the best thing that she can do, but she's going to have to just be Obama when it's all said and done anyway. I think Cassidy is his spot on Obamacare was the point of the spot wasn't Obamacare really it was the point of the spot was I'm a doctor, and that's I got to tell you that polls really strongly in the state of Louisiana. People trust doctors, a la all of these doctors in Congress, and it's
three
just
doctors in the House.
Yeah, three. Put a doctor in the House.
Yeah, and there was
a conservative in Congress.
There was Dr. John Cooksey.
That was our slogan, put a doctor in the House and a conservative in Congress.
Yeah. Well, and 12 years ago when Dr. John was running, along with Tony Perkins and along with Susie Terrell,
yes,
against Mary Landrieu, Bill Cassidy was not only backing Landrieu but was sending her lots of money, he and his wife, to her campaign war chest. And he had three brands of Republicanism to choose from. Something happened. Was it what kind of epiphany occurs for a man in his mid-40s?
On the road to Damascus? I know what my epiphany was. Everybody knows what that is, in God we trust. I don't know what happened to the guy. Or maybe nothing happened to the guy.
Well, at 45
maybe he's
or
a centrist.
So, at 45, well, he went from a liberal to a conservative.
Yes.
Back to caucus, wrote letters to the editor criticizing Reagan.
Let's put it this way. He had to run in a Republican district. Okay, let's just get down here and talk it, say it like it is. Now, was there more than just politics to it? I'm sure there was. A man don't change his right. worldview simply just because he wants to get elected. I don't believe that.
Charles,
but on the other hand, that's a part of
it. On North Foster. Good morning, Charles. You're on the air with Roy Fletcher.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning to your guests. And I really enjoyed the fable of the epic end of the Democrats in Louisiana, which I think is absolutely beautiful. But Mr. Fletcher has done a great job of not giving credit to Governor Jindal and not giving credit to David and Charles Koch, who want to use this state as a footstool and is going to help Louisiana become Democratic again. And I will listen to Mr. Fletcher squirm on that one. Thank you.
That's kind of good.
You want to bite on that?
Actually, it's kind of good. You know.
Now, here's a...
Charles just got out there.
Here's an email from John Williams saying the Landrieu ad with her father was genius, especially in North Louisiana, because in North Louisiana, Moon Landrieu was always thought to be black. And there may be some truth to that.
There was a nickname that they put on Moon up there that I don't want to get into, but... But the point, you know, you may be right there, too. I mean, there's always a little bit of salty here and there. I like that. That's pretty interesting.
And
I like both of those, Charles and
But his. Unfortunately, campaigns, as you know, and you're a practitioner, quite often it gets down to the lowest common denominator.
It gets down to the lowest common denominator and the fewest votes. I mean, you know, Charles Romer, the old man Romer, had a saying that I always thought that was wonderful. He said, in the last 3 days of campaign, show me a man with 50 votes, and I'll show you a powerful SOB.
Stephen and Gonzalez. Stephen, you're on the air with Roy Fletcher.
Hi, Roy. Good morning. I have a question about the Mary Landrieu ad. I think that ad that she's running where she's saying she's more or less saying she got the pipeline, the Keystone Pipeline, and that still hasn't been approved. I think that's going to hurt her, don't you?
I don't think that you can go out and say something that absolutely hadn't happened, and it hasn't happened, and it's likely not going to happen under this administration, let's face it. And that ad is somewhat misleading. I do think that people it hurts her credibility, because I think she has an argument to make on other things with respect to energy that she ought to make, and not make up something.
297-5633. Brian Breen in Capitol Heights writes, I was a theater major with Mitch Landrieu at Catholic University in the early 80s, and I can tell you he was a good actor, had a strong singing voice, and was a stand-up guy.
Well, thank you, Diane. Isn't that nice?
This is Brian.
Brian, I apologize. Brian. I can't hear. there we go. That's interesting. Who would have thought that somebody would be in Baton Rouge that went to Catholic University with Mitch Landrieu?
Well,
that's kind of wild.
We live in a cosmopolitan city.
Yeah.
And we do.
Yep, we do.
But I think Mitch Landrieu is a better stump speaker than his sister.
I think Mitch Landrieu is a better politician than his sister. You want to know the truth. Not because
– Mitch has lost twice. He's only lost once.
I understand that. But it is where Mitch had to run – that created the situation. Mm-hmm. When a city was feeling its racial oats, so to mm-hmm. speak, and African Americans wanted control of City Hall, he happened to be the white guy in the way, and that's just the way it was.
297-5633 is your number, and we will spend a few more minutes with Roy Fletcher if you'd like to get in. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757, and we will talk about Common Core.
Oh, boy.
And let's set this up. Do you think John White will last till the 4th of July?
He might last till the 4th of July, but I wouldn't give him to the 4th of August.
That Barack Obama's birthday.
Well, whatever. You know those things much better than I do, especially on the left side. I'm only joking. That's
the 3rd is Dan Clater's.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's nice. I don't think he... I don't think it lasts till the end of August.
All right, we'll be back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. Roy Fletcher with us for a few more minutes, and over the weekend, Governor Jindal gave another address to a conservative group, and once again gave his opinion that the United States is a country that is challenging religious liberty. And the governor is obviously campaigning as a stalwart of the religious right in his quest to become president of the United States. Now, Roy Fletcher, this is a man who was involved in an exorcism and wrote about it many years ago. And you talked about sincerity. I think he's sincere on this.
Oh, I do, too. I mean, you don't get me into exorcisms. I mean, there's too much evidence in our church about some of those things, and so I'm not going there. But I think he's sincere about that. But on this statement that he made, that the notion of insurrection or the notion of a hostile takeover, I don't know if he used the R word or not, the revolution word, but it got close to it. And, you know, he's running hard to the right, and he's governing hard to the right, all of a sudden, really hard to the right. And, you know, he's got to be careful here. I know he's trying to win some primaries in the presidential race, but he's got to leave himself something when it's over if he don't win.
Well, this could very well be his last race, win or lose.
Yeah, the problem is that he's got to go on and make a living. He's got kids and so on and so forth.
Oh, he'll make a living.
Oh, you know, you got to be careful about going that far out there on something. I don't think that was advisable. I'll be honest with you. I think he.
Well, who are his advisors? In the past, you've been one of his advisors.
Tim, no, I'm not. I've done.
But have you been on the payroll occasionally? Haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah. But I mean, I hadn't. I mean,
in a while.
I'm not in a presidential race.
If well, it would probably serve him well to have some diverse viewpoints. Have you and Teeple at the same table? But there's this this perception that Timmy Teeple is the man behind the throne, but I'm not so sure about that. I think Timmy probably reaffirms what the governor believes, but I think Bobby Jindal's the guy who's making the call.
I think in this situation that Bobby Jindal is the guy making the call in this presidential thing. And I think it's bleeding back into state. And, I mean, I think that the governor has taken some positions that he did not have to take. And he's kind of got, but it only makes sense in the context of running for president. Mm-hmm. And it's, I didn't think that was true for a long time, but I'm beginning to think that.
What happened with Common Core?
Well, he switched. I mean, he switched teams right in the middle of the game.
He doesn't do that often.
And he did it brilliantly, but he did it. Now, I don't think it's hurt him in Louisiana. And I don't think it's hurt him with the right wing nationally, Hard Rock. But it has in other quarters, it has put him in a position of being in contradistinction to his base on one hand, and that is big business. And you notice he's not the establishment big business guy in a presidential race. He's not running that way. He's running to the right. To the populist.
But why doesn't a guy like Stephen Wagasback come out and criticize him for backing away?
Because he worked for it.
What does that have to do with it?
That's what I say. Just go ahead and say it. I mean, you know, he need. I mean, and they're trying, but, you know, I find
Lane Grigsby criticized him.
Well, now Lane will criticize anybody. and while he's talking good about him, he'll talk ugly about him. He's, you know. He don't like me. I'm fine with me.
Well, this is viewed by some as an act of betrayal. Not necessarily that he switched, but as John White said publicly,
yes,
he switched with two outs in the bottom of the ninth.
Well, I mean, the game wasn't over. I mean, you know, John, you play us. That's why they play nine innings of baseball and four quarters of football. I mean, he did it. He did it brilliantly. And the fact that he did it late was pretty darn good, too.
Here's a good observation from Charles Alexander. This may even be the former LSU running back, number four, gained 1,686 yards. Oh, the greatest. But Charles says that Bobby Jindal is 43, and the chances of him running for president are such that he will likely do it more than once. After all, as Charles notes, it took Ronald Reagan three tries.
Yeah, it's a good point. You ought to think about the distance, not the short term. And I just don't think that, you know, talking about insurrection, I mean, whatever, however he said it, it was really odd. And it just didn't sound right to me. It was a little off key. And it kind of stuff can mess you up.
Okay. And finally, another listener wants to know if it's Jonathan. He asks if President Obama will be on the campaign trail for Senator Landrieu this fall?
Strongly, strongly, strongly doubt it. Now, he might be on a robocall, but that, but I'll tell you who I think is going to come here, though.
I know who you're going to say.
William Clinton.
William Jefferson Clinton.
That's right. I think he's absolutely coming.
Oh, I think he's coming more than once.
I do,
and
too.
I think his wife will come,
and
too.
I think that they have polling data that says that people like William Jefferson Clinton in Louisiana.
Well, put it this way. Without William Jefferson Clinton, there would never have been a Senator Landrieu. On the day she was elected in 1996, she won by 5,788 votes over Lewis Elwood Woody Jenkins, who will be at the press club today, noon at the Bell
Hurry
Hotel.
Up, because I'm a...
Bill Clinton won by 215,000 votes over Bob Dole, same ballot, one item ahead of the Senate race.
I'll tell you one other thing. If she owes her election to Bill Clinton and to Mike Foster, because local option for Gaiman was on the ballot the same day that she ran.
That is interesting. And it was a close enough race.
There was huge amounts of money being spent on that local option stuff.
And she, in the first race, won by 100,000 votes in New Orleans and lost by 95,000 votes in the rest of the state.
Yeah.
And Lewis Elwood Woody Jenkins, who today, if he's coaxed, might even address it at the press club.
He still thinks
he was robbed of victory.
What, he was 18, robbed.
18 years. My goodness.
Yeah, that's been a long time, man. Yeah. We've been through it.
It's always fun to talk with you, Roy.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jim.
Take care. We're joined now by Chris Collin, and he, along with Rob Badeker, they have written a book that I think is one that people like Roy and me and most of the people in our listening audience could appreciate. Chances are we know how to talk, but do we really know how to talk to anyone at any time? And his book is What to Talk About on a Plane, at a Cocktail Party, in a Tiny Elevator with Your Boss's Boss. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. How you doing?
Doing well. Good to talk with you. And you're a guy who has written about many other things, and Chris's works appeared in the New York Times, in Wired, and he lives in San Francisco, and in this book, I think, is important for those of us who want to make a good impression. Eli Jones, the former business dean at LSU, he said that people generally make judgments about one another within the first 6 to 8 seconds. So what can we say to help the cause when we're walking up to a stranger?
Look, first of all, I think we're all doing pretty good, right? We manage to make it through our days and talk to our fellow humans the vast majority of the time without catastrophe. But I do think even the smoothest operators among us panic sometimes. We hit that wall. We can't think of a single thing to say that's interesting, either with a stranger that we want to talk with or, you know, maybe your good friend of many years or a spouse. You run out of interesting things. You start to sound boring to yourself. So that's why we wrote the book. And I should warn people, it's only 62% serious. My co-author and I think that there's something sort of sweetly absurd about the whole way human beings approach conversation, and we wanted to be a little funny about it.
There are a few, more than a few funny lines in the book, but humor is always a winner. You know, Larry King. King once said the reason, and of course, Larry's not one to be modest, but he said the reason he'd had so much success with women is that he's funny. And
I didn't realize he had that much success.
Well, he's been married 7 times, so he I guess he was successful on the front end. The back end didn't turn out so well, but obviously, a lot of women gravitated to him before he became Larry King.
Right.
So. What do we do when we're on an elevator with somebody, and maybe it's a person we're attracted to romantically, perhaps, we think, or maybe it's just somebody we just want, it looks like an interesting person. What's a good line to start the conversation if there's going to be a conversation?
first of all, elevators are tricky, obviously. I think we're always trying to figure out, part of the panic that we feel in an elevator is we're trying to figure out how to have a normal conversation. But it's not a normal place. It's a very strange place. The conversation can only last about 10 seconds. So, you know, skip the how are you doing, skip the nice weather we're having. You know, you can just jump in with a quick question. We always advise in our book, ask for stories. You know this in your job. Ask for stories, not answers. You know, if you say, where are you from? Someone's going to say, Minneapolis, and then the conversation's over. if you say, how did you end up here in New Orleans or wherever, you know, there tends to be a story behind that. And you can even ask for a small story. You know, what did you do this morning before you came to work? What's your morning routine? You know, I find that the sort of minutiae of people's lives is often the most interesting stuff, and that's where you sort of learn about who they are, which is what you're always trying to do in the first place.
You have a chapter, and all the chapters are brief, but this one is Breaking the Mirror. When small talk stalls out, it's often due to a phenomenon we call mirroring. In our attempts to be polite, we often answer people's questions directly, repeat their observations, or just blandly agree with whatever they say. James, it's a beautiful day. John, yes, it is a beautiful day. Well, you have another response from John that might have actually provoked a conversation. Do you remember what it was? James says, it's a beautiful day, and John says?
I don't remember.
It says, they say the weather was just like this when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor.
That's right. You know, that's obviously we're being silly there, but I think that you need to be this sort of goes back to the humor thing and our Larry King business. You know, if you're willing to be a little absurd and recognize that conversation is a fundamentally funny thing that we do, you can lighten up a little bit about it. And don't be afraid to be weird. You know, say something a little off the wall. In our experience, people are far more receptive to something offbeat and even odd than we tend to think. So here's an example. There's actually a wonderful question that you can ask at any point, in any conversation, and it really it's sort of surprisingly effective at getting things going. What kind of car did your dad drive when you were a kid? Someone told me this years ago when I was just starting out as a journalist that will jumpstart any conversation, and it actually does. There's something about asking what kind of car did your dad drive as a kid that gets people to talk about their own life. It's not prying, you know, it's safe stuff. Pretty soon, you know, you're starting with something banal like a car, and then you're talking about where they're from and what kind of childhood they had and what their parents were like. And you need to find, I think, questions like that help you sort of ease into an interesting conversation, but you can't start at 60. You know, you got to start sort of, you got to ramp up.
Got to ramp up.
Yeah.
Here's one in here. What to talk about with a bank teller? What's a good way of being kind and presentable and starting a conversation with a bank teller if you wish to?
Well, you know, with a bank teller, with the supermarket checkout person, with the mail carrier, the whole point is, you know, these are glancing interactions. You're not going to have a long, drawn out, head-to-head conversation. You want to have a quick but interesting one. Don't say, you know, how's your day going? You know, ask something about their job that you don't know. You know, the bank teller, you know, who's the strangest customer you've had all day? you know, if you can tap into your curiosity, I think we all know this, and it's so easy to forget, the real key to good conversation is just curiosity.
You got a line here that might or might not work. Say to a bank teller, do you ever go in the vault and just smell the money?
Yeah. You know, saying things like that, are they going to look at you funny? Yes. That's okay, though. Because, you know, chances are they've sort of wondered it themselves.
What to talk about with the taxi driver?
Well, taxi drivers, as we all know, have the best stories in town. They have this sort of back door onto humanity. They get to meet people at all their interesting times. So yeah, ask them, you know, what's the strangest fare you've ever had?
Or the biggest fare.
Or the biggest fare. Just get them telling stories.
Mm-hmm. And studies through the years have shown that dentists have the highest suicide rates, and perhaps that's understandable because generally people who go to the dentist are not happy to be there. And you've got some lines on what to say to your dentist.
We like to sort of stir the pot with this one. Get them going against doctors. If you can fan the flames of a little rivalry there, then pretty soon you've got some interesting stuff going. Ask them about their what they think of doctors. They'll try and silence you by putting tools in your mouth. That's why we advise having a few index cards ready to go. Mm-hmm. You just pull them out of your pocket, and you can have your conversation via index card.
Well, it is an interesting book about all kinds of situations, including being fired or quitting a job. It's something that I think all of us can benefit from and have a few laughs along the way. What to talk about on a plane, at a cocktail party, in a tiny elevator with your boss's boss. Thank you, Chris Collin.
Thanks, Jim.
Take care.
You too.
And we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, for Frank Barnett, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.